Southeast Radio's morning mix. Southeast
Radio. It's outgoing MEP Claire Daly. Good morning to you, Claire.
Hi, Alan. How's it going?
Claire, the first question people want to know is, when does it all change? So when do you actually leave Europe as an MEP? What's the actual date, the definitive
date? Well, we're still
date?
Here. We're still here at the moment. So the mandate finishes up on around the 15th of July. So that's when the first new Strasbourg session for the new MEPs kicks in. So at the moment, we're still over in Brussels, really tidying things up, I suppose, mainly concerned about trying to get my staff sorted in new jobs. But yeah, it finishes up at the end of July. Middle of July, yeah. 15th.
I leave the obvious question, what you're going to do next, to the end of the interview with you this morning. But
well, that's the hardest one, because I haven't a clue. That's an easy one to answer, not an idea. Look, I've been a political activist for 40 years. I've been an elected representative now for 25 years, uninterrupted as a councillor, as a TD, and then as an MEP. So this is actually the first summer where I'm not an elected rep, so I haven't a clue what I'm going to do next.
Well, let's look back then on what you have done. What do you believe were your most significant achievements as an MEP, and what do you think you could have done differently or would have done differently in hindsight?
Very little, to be honest with you. I mean, I think both myself and Mick Wallace have managed to create an enormous international platform from the European Parliament as voices for diplomacy, for international law, and for the peaceable resolution of disputes, which is what the UN Charter requires and what we in our constitution in Ireland stand for as a neutral country. So at a time when war returned on a very vast scale on Europe, I think we used that platform to call for diplomacy and reason. That position was misrepresented deliberately over years by sections of the Irish media, and we were smeared accordingly. But I personally, and I assume it's the same, I'm really proud that we stood against that tide and in difficult circumstances. And sadly, I think that history will vindicate us, because what we said was we condemned the war and the invasion by Russia of Ukraine, but we said that this would only be sorted out diplomatically by a negotiated settlement, that arms only prolong the conflict, and that sanctions hurt the people of Europe. And both of those tragedies have come to pass. The horrific war is ongoing. Ukrainians are losing their lives at a vast number. More territory has been occupied, and the people in Europe are paying with the cost of living crisis. So,
right. You've touched on two issues there.
There will be negotiations. Yeah. So, yeah.
You've touched on two issues there that I'd like to explore a bit more. I mean, a lot of the questions I'm putting to you would have put to MEP Mick Wallace as well. Like, how do you respond to criticisms regarding what many people thought was a perceived alliance with totalitarian regimes like Russia and China? So I'll let you respond directly, because they're the questions that people would expect put to you.
It's very easy. It's totally not true. It's a complete and deliberate falsehood repeated over years. And the proof of that is, I would put to anybody who has that view, and obviously people have heard that and we all know there's no smoke without fire, there must be some truth in it. But if you actually, I challenge anybody to find any statement anywhere that I ever said that gave support to either Putin or to the Russian administration. In fact, all of the evidence points the opposite. We voted time and again to condemn Russia's invasion. In the days after the war broke out, we had an opinion piece in the Irish Times where we called it the gravest of crimes under international law, and we argued for the territorial integrity of Ukraine. So that information was known, and that information was there. What was done, not just in Ireland, we all know that truth is the first casualty of war. We know the Iraq war was started by lies. But the difference in this one was that anybody who was calling for peace was immediately demonized and labeled as pro-Russian. Why don't they do? My position on Russia was exactly the same as it is on Palestine, a negotiated settlement and a ceasefire. But nobody calls me a Netanyahu puppet, because people in Ireland understand very well the context of the war on the people of Gaza. They know full and well. Our knowledge of Russian history may be not as clear, but Putin is a right-wing nationalist, Russian nationalist. He's not a socialist or a communist or a left-winger, and I've never said anything to support him. I've been an anti-war activist all of my life, and continue to do so, and I stand by what I said then and that's what I say now. that war will only be ended by peace, and it's the ordinary people in Ukraine and indeed in Russia who are paying for it with their lives. Mm-hmm. And it's the big arms companies in Europe that are reaping the profits, and it's the ordinary people who are paying across Europe in a cost of living crisis and an energy crisis. And we're now on the verge of another mandate of Ursula von der Leyen back at the helm, where she wants to turbocharge defence, and that's actually making Europe more unsafe. There was a myth put out that Ukraine could win this war militarily. They never could. Look at the map. Look at the sizes of the countries. It's impossible. All we're doing is condemning them to slaughter. And the UN Charter says we need to negotiate for a peaceful resolution of disputes. Europe never did that, and that's to their shame. But I'm very glad that we use the platform.
All right, well, you've given a fairly full and frank response to that. Whether people agree or disagree with you, it's up to them, but you've given your view on this. But I'd like to talk to you about the media strategy now and the reasons behind your reluctance to engage with certain journalists and outlets. And I'd say, amongst the publicity you have given or have been granted, that 7-second soundbite with the RT reporter where you stated quite clearly you weren't going to talk to them, do you regret saying that to them? I mean, that has gone globally.
It went down the trees. It's been globally received massively positively, and people the length and breadth of Ireland and Europe said, fair play to you. After everything those people have put you through, well done and well said. Look, I've no problem in engaging with the real media, in having an exchange of views, but journalism has been debased in Ireland away from that. We don't have exchanges of views now. You're either for us or you're against us. If you talk about peace in Ukraine, you're a Putin puppet. If you question the government's migration policy, you're far right. If you question the COVID policy, you're an anti-vaxxer. There's no exchange of views and political dialogue anymore. It's all about labelling people. And the Irish media, around the time of the Russian invasion, and in my opinion, because they've always wanted to silence Eurocritical left-wing voices, which Dublin in particular has always returned, saw their chance in the understandable horror of people about the invasion of Ukraine. They distorted our position and said, right, we're going to make sure that this voice is silenced. Now, actually, loads of people in the election thanked us for our position on Ukraine, loads and loads, and for our stance on Gaza. The reason why I probably didn't get elected was also because the left decided to run a candidate against me and split the vote. We very nearly made it in both areas. So it's not that I don't talk to the media. I'm very happy to engage. We do our own podcast. We issued our own statement. I'm talking to you because local radio in Ireland is different. But I wasn't going to give a platform to people who had smeared and ignored me for 5 years. The amount of press statements we put in about our work, which was greater than all of the other MEPs put together in terms of the legislative files that we dealt with, either as leaders for the parliament or the groups on civil liberties issues, on transport, on the environment, on many issues which never saw the light of day in the Irish media. You know, we were always condemned when we were in the Dáil. We were always the bold ones in the back row, and the Irish media always gave us a hard time. But Irish people could see us in the Dáil, and they knew what we were doing, and they liked it, and they understood the point. When we were in Europe, they didn't see us. They only saw what the media told them, and that was all about international issues, even though we did so, so much more, and we're internationally respected all over Europe and the world for that. Like, our standing has been massive, but if you read and people in Europe are saying, how could this be? Ye have been the clearest voices for Palestine. Right. That voice is gone now. The clearest voices against militarization. How could this be? And one of the reasons was the role of the Irish media, particularly in Dublin. I think country people are a bit more, you know, don't have the stranglehold. It was really the Irish Times and RTE. But I mean, I engage with anybody. You know, it's not that I don't want to talk to people. We do our podcasts, we do that. But I wasn't going to give them a platform. And frankly, I'm delighted that I did it, and people loved it everywhere. Even my mother, who would be very strict on these things, thought it was absolutely the right thing to do in the circumstances.
Marla, you've given a fairly strong answer to that particular question. Again, we put it out to our Morning Mix listeners. Agree or disagree, share your thoughts with us, please, on 053 914 5222. Look, here's another big talking point as well. Do you think your focus on international issues, such as anti-militarism, criticism of US policies, that it overshadowed your work on domestic Irish issues? And this is a big issue that people feel sometimes you and Mick went off to Europe and forgot about Ireland.
Yeah, but you see, this is the myth, and I've seen people stand and get elected and don't say, I want to be an MEP for Dublin. to do things for Dublin. Well, if you want to do things for Dublin or Ireland, you should be in the Irish Parliament. That's the truth of it. And the people who largely have been returned to Europe now have been in government and haven't done much for Ireland or Dublin. This is the European Parliament, and it deals with issues across Europe. And of course, it's linked to Ireland. I mean, if you look at one of the last decisions that the Parliament took, which Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael supported, was to reinstate the state aid rules, which hamstrings government's abilities to invest in public services, public housing, public health and so on. We stood against that and argued against that. Obviously, that has an impact in Ireland, but it's not specific to Ireland. There's very few issues that are specific to Ireland. So we did a lot of work. I was on the Transport Committee. I used to work in Aer Lingus. If they hadn't privatised the catering during the COVID, maybe I would have been looking for my job back there now, but unfortunately that's not there. But I did a lot of work on transport. I did a lot of work on civil liberties. And that was recognised across Europe with prisoners. We do a lot of prisoner work in the Dáil. We did it. And we did it in Europe. I mean, I was, the Ministry of Culture in Bulgaria was opened up by the minister, especially to host an event organised by me. Mm. It didn't even happen with a Bulgarian MEP. You never saw that in the papers either. So right. Our jobs were to represent issues across Europe.
How do you handle criticism, Claire? Here's a question left to centre for you. How do you handle criticism? Do you believe your approach to it sometimes might have impacted on your public image and your re-election prospects? I think somebody has hinted that you don't handle criticism very well. I suppose none of us really do when you think of it.
Well, I'd like to know an example of that. Like what? Like, I mean,
well, I don't have the example. I've just got a general question.
You know what I mean? Like, I never personalize comments with anybody. We actually have a really good relationship, and we're known in the Dáil and subsequently as getting on with everybody, including people who don't share our political viewpoints. I never throw the head or anything like that. I mean, my comment with RTE, I wasn't aggressive or annoyed. I was amused, kind of, really, and very polite about it. And if somebody has a criticism with me, I immediately try and engage with them and exchange a views. That doesn't mean that the person has to agree with me at the end of it, but I'd like them to listen to me, and I listen to them, and that's the way politics used to be done. We all learn something, and we all move on. Yeah. So, you know, I'm aware that I'm presented as somebody who is, I'm a strong woman, but I'm not aggressive or I'm not argumentative, and would have been widely considered to be one of the most amenable people in the Dáil. I'm exactly the same person as I was in the European Parliament. We have friends in all of the political groups, all of the staff here. We're the most recognised Irish faces here. And, you know, a day would not go by here without some member of staff or some translator coming up to us and saying, "Hi, I'm from Slovenia. I love when you guys speak. You're speaking for me." Hmm. So, you know, people are entitled to criticise. That's great. That's democracy.
Okay.
An exchange of views is healthy, and I take on board.
In other words, what you're saying to me is what you hear, what you see, is what you get. So what are we going to get now from Claire Daly? I mean, where are you going to go next? I told you I'd leave it to the last question.
I'm going on my holidays, as I said. Yeah, as I said, I'm going on my holidays now. This is the first time in 25 years that I am not a public representative. And there's something very nice about that as well, I can tell you. I don't have to feel as, you know, keen to answer my emails and all that kind of thing. So, look, I'm going to take the summer off, let the dust settle and see. We've had huge response from people all over, you know, Europe, actually, and Ireland, and even the US. We've been doing podcasts there, and people asking, what are we doing the next? I don't know. We'll see. But look, the point I have made to everybody is the world is becoming a more dangerous place. Europe is becoming more militarised and unsafe at a time when we should be dealing with climate change. And change only comes from ordinary people organising. So that's the key vehicle for change anyway. And that's what I will be part of one way or another, whether it's in an elected forum in Europe or in Ireland, who knows. Hmm. But there's plenty of ways of organising to change things. I was a student leader, a trade union leader, a community leader and an elected rep. It had never been my plan to just be an elected rep. So I'd like to think that I will be a crusading campaigner in some arena, wherever that might be.
Could it be in November, in a general election?
Who knows? Don't be putting words in my mouth now, Alan, or trying to sort of get an exclusive. I'll tell you what, if it is, I'll let you be the first to know. Okay.
I'll hold you to that. Thank you for taking our call this morning.
Okay.
Good morning.
That's the deal. No bother. Talk to you, Alan. See you. Bye-bye.
That was Claire Daly there, outgoing MEP, calling it as she sees it.
Southeast Radio's Morning Mix.